gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Deeper Grooves. I got a special treat for you on season 5, episode 44. We speak with multi-Grammy winner, Fantastic Negrito of Tiny Desk fame and beyond. Fantastic Negrito discusses what impacts his supporters have had on his career, how he got started in music, and his latest album, White Jesus, Black Problems, that also has an amazing supplemental documentary and music video series. When asked about his musical style, Fantastic Negrito says, "I think the great thing about being a middle-aged guy doing this just from the streets, I don't need to follow those rules. I feel like it's the sound of America." Let's listen up to Fantastic Negrito. So we're super excited to have you on 88.5 At Home Interviews. The station loves you. I've been playing you on my show, Deeper Grooves. The last one, I think, was the Highest Bidder. Of course, of course.
I appreciate yeah. that, man. If you don't play me, you know, I don't eat.
That's right. That's right. James Brown said, "You don't work, you don't eat. You don't play me, you don't eat."
So respect. You don't play me, you don't eat. So give praise to Cliff Beach.
Well, thank you, sir. Good praise to you. Now, I've been following your trajectory since you won the Tiny Desk. I think we spoke first back in 2014, around that time. And 2015. So it's been a while.
Tiny Desk, I was the first winner, the inaugural winner.
And, you know, a lot of people since have followed your path of using that platform in NPR, but you were the first to do that and to win and to win Grammys, you know, subsequently from that. So kudos to you for sure.
I got a lot of firsts. I'm a first kind of guy. It's just, I don't know. It's in the DNA. I take risks, and I got a beautiful community that supports me. And that's really the key, is having the support system and giving it up to other folks. You know what I mean? That is the key to anyone out there listening, man. You know, if you can't be the smartest one in the room, and you got to give it up to other folks.
Definitely true. So you've been doing it quite a long time. You started off busking in Oakland, where you're from. So just give us the beginning of your musical origins. How did you get into music?
Well, let's just go back then, if you want to do it, because remember, I'm a dinosaur. Dinosaur, my muscles are so. Anyway, so I started off, you know, as a young man in Oakland, grinding on the corners, doing things I shouldn't be doing, and, you know, selling drugs and going to jail and doing stupid things. I don't want to. And then I, you know, people around me started dying, and I was like, I'm not ready to be in a body bag. So I escaped to the city of Los Angeles with $100 and a dream in my 20s. And I first met Prince's manager, because he was at a golf course in Bel Air, and my homie was, what do you call him? He was the caddy. Mm-hmm. So Prince's manager signed me, and then Jimmy Iovine signed me to a record deal. Congratulations, wow. Jimmy, for making it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'll see you soon. No, I'm just kidding. But so what happens is they sign me to a 5-year deal. I make a record. Everyone hates it. I'm sad and depressed. And then something hits me. I get into a car accident. Boom. Wow. I'm in a coma 3 weeks, and it destroys my playing hand. So then from then I was released from the record deal. Someone from the hospital came when I woke up from the coma and told me, "Hey, you're releasing the record." If I make a movie, I'm putting that scene in it.
For sure.
I mean, it was like cold, but I was happy too, because I wanted to get out of it. So then I spent years kind of in obscurity in the LA underground, you know, messing with my rockin' Espanol brothers and Afro punk. You know, I did that, really got into that scene, and I loved it. But there came a point where I just quit, finally sold all my instruments, moved back home to Oakland, California, started growing a lot of weed. And I'm talking about a lot of weed, a lot of weed. So that helped me, you know, finance my existence, but I wasn't really doing music. And then I had the idea, like, you know what? I feel free now that I'm like a middle-aged dude. I don't feel that pressure of being young and strong and beautiful, like a 20-year-old, like thinking, you know, that dude was gone now, and I was a grown ass man. I thought, you know, I just want to do the music for my soul, for myself. and try to contribute it to the people around me on the train station, San Francisco. No, rents are so high in San Francisco. Oh, yeah. You know, whatever, you know. Yeah. Oh, we're going to break it in Oaktown, y'all. You know, whatever. I was just out there just singing it. And it really was resonating with people. I thought, this is cool. I'm digging this. And someone suggested, like, hey, why don't you go to NPR Tiny Desk? And I didn't even know what it was. I was pretending I knew what Tiny Desk was, but I'll be honest, I didn't know what it was. I'd never even seen it. You know, I wasn't really on NPR, like, radar. It wasn't something I, like, tuned into.
Right.
And so I was just like, oh, man, but, you know, like, my lyrics aren't really politically correct. I'm not like someone like, yeah, this is my dogmatic belief. You know, I'm like this leftist, and I'm not that dude. Mm-hmm. So I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that because I'm talking about stuff they may not want to hear. But then I was in a collective and they voted. They said that I had to do it. So I was like, man, I was upset. Why do I have to do this, you know, for these people who won't even probably recognize me? As, you know, for me, being a grown-ass Black man growing up in Oakland and, like, just going through things that people, they don't want to hear this stuff, you know, although it's reality. And they don't want to hear your story. You know, they want some other version of you, you know, like, people do that to you. Mm-hmm. They do it to you, I'm sure. Like, hey, I have a cliff. I need you to be like this on this paper here. And you'd be like, hey, that's not me. But mm-hmm. I need you to, this makes me feel comfortable when you're like this. I feel like that's people's repressed fantasies, you know, that they have, because it makes them feel better in the world. So people can be like that. So I try to stay away from that. Mm-hmm. But I was wrong. And I was being prejudiced. And I wasn't giving an institution a chance, because I just did a one take, never thought about it again. And then before I knew it, someone was like, hey, you're in the top 10 at NPR Tiny Desk. I'm like, what? And I look at the videos, I'm like, man, you know, all these hip, like, people with, like, slick ass videos. I'm like, how they like me? You know, I'm just in an elevator screaming, you know, I call this Black Roots music. You know, this is from the original gutter. People be talking about the gutter. Mm-hmm. The music I was doing, it's like, that's from the original gutter. So, so it was just a surprise to be embraced like that. And that's how it happened. And I think the lesson is, hey, don't let anybody tell your story and don't doubt yourself. Be original. What I do seems strange to me sometimes. I'm like, man, you know, I'm over here. I don't see people doing what I'm doing. I'm a bit of a freak and a weirdo in a sense, but I'm really happy being that artist. I love being this artist. So.
And you got a good company. I mean, all the people that we revere, from, you know, the Michael Jacksons to the Prince, they're all a little weird. That's what music gravitates to. So you're in good company.
My skin bleached and my nose done. Look out.
I think noses should go bigger. That's the way to change it up.
Yeah, I like that nose. Like this.
Exactly.
No disrespect to Mike, but, you know, that is weird to me. That's part of my title, like, White Jesus, Black Problem. It's kind of that mentality, like, that we have to be this. Hey, you got to be this. Like, what? Who said I got to be that?
Right. And we don't dig deep, because if you really dig deep into a white Jesus, you're like, well, he lived in Egypt, you know, went through Egypt. He's from Israel. That's Middle Eastern. These are brown people.
They look like you. You look more like Jesus, bro. I've been over there. You look like, I don't know what your ethnicity is, but I'm like, this looks like Jesus here.
Oh, yeah. My family's all mixed. Black and everything in between.
Yeah, agony. Yeah, well, that's what it is. So, and then listen, just like that title, was like, sometimes, just like my name, Fantastic Negrito, it's just some things you don't have to think about. They're like, I know when they come like that they come from, they're coming from ancestors and some divine. I stay out the way. So,
talk about that record though, the latest one.
Yeah, well, then I'll talk about it. Yeah, it was like, I felt like, first it started off like this. I was like, all right, let me just be honest and I have a tendency to perform. I mean, I'm the eighth of 14 kids, you know what I mean? It's like, I didn't really get attention from my mother or my father. So take a deep breath and tell the truth here. So the truth is this, man, I was like, oh wow, man, I did 3 albums and they all won Grammys. I felt a little strange about that. And I know I do like innovative and different stuff, but I honestly do it, I think, to throw off people. Like, okay, fine. I have a problem with being accepted because I never was accepted, you know, by my own parents. So it makes me a little uncomfortable. People are like, oh, you're good. Oh. So I think I just, well, I'm gonna make the record like this. I'm gonna find a story and I'm gonna go here. So I really felt like, okay, I gotta get away from this thing. And I started off making a record with Sting. Nice. So we recorded together and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to hit up Stevie Wonder. If I can get Sting, Stevie Wonder, all the people a little like 10 years, 20 years older than me, I'm gonna try to get George Clinton. I'm gonna try to get all these greats and just put on this one record. And that's what I want my new record to be. But as soon as my brother Sting, my older brother Sting, my elder, we recorded something I think is banging. And then something strange happened like a few days later. The pandemic, lockdown. And I was like, oh, I couldn't move then. People were like, nah, man, we don't wanna make no records. Catch me next time. So then I spent like a year on my farm. I live on a farm and just kind of, doing not much. Couldn't go on tour, couldn't make any money, bank account shrinking. Mm. I was worried. I'm like starting to fill out applications and shit again, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So I get a call from a TV show called Black Lightning. And they're like, man, we love this track you and E-40 did on your last record. I'm like, yeah, I like that track. Nobody really paid attention to it. Hey, would you come perform that? You and 40? And I'm like, yeah. You know, I'd hit him up. He's like, man, it's the pandemic, homie. It's like, I don't need that money probably as much as you need it. You know what I mean? Because he's E-40. And yeah. So he's not going. I ain't traveling to do that. So I went down there and did it. Man, you get down there, it was like, I'm wearing 3 masks, goggles, hood on the plane, shivering in the corner. Like people think I'm withdrawn from heroin or something. I'm like, nah, I'm just scared of this pandemic, you know? So I get down there and they're like, you got to stay in your hotel. This is quarantine. I'm like, damn. So I'm in there and I'm on the computer, some inboxes. I'm just looking at some. I never really look at that stuff, but I had time. I see some people like, you know, Sonde Brass, some people like F U N word, some people like, hey, I love your music, you changed my life. I mean, the spectrum.
Right.
We hate you, we love you, you know. And it's like, you know, I can make an album off that inbox. What happens is I get to this message and it goes, hey, I'm your cousin from your father's side. I'm like, I never even met anybody from my father's side. He's born in 1905. You know what I mean? Think about that. Let that sink in. My dad's born in 1905. When he had me, he was 63. My mama was 30. Mm. 63 and 30. So that's a whole nother thing. So I didn't know anything about him. So then I get in there looking like my last name through this document. It's not even real. Like there was nobody else named that. My dad had created that name. He said he was from East Africa. I'm reading the paper. It says he's from the Bahamas. I got all these cousins and relatives that for the first time in my life, mine is blown. So I thought, damn, white Jesus, black problems. I kept thinking that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this man was so brilliant and so advanced, but he was born a generation after slavery. And that's dangerous to be brilliant and advanced and progressive if you're a black man in America and you're born at that time. So he made up this whole lie to navigate. I always remember my dad talking to us like, you know, yeah, it's racism out there. Yeah, he'd be like, yes, yeah, so what is racism out there? I mean, I never understood that how he messed with it like that. He'd be like, I'm not nobody's victim. He said, he used to say, you think white people are special? I always remember, I want to make a t-shirt like that. He said, they're not special. He said, you roll it up, roll the sleeves up, homie, and get to work. Can't nobody outdo you. Can't nobody outwork you. Mm-hmm. And that was like a powerful message. Although he was like toxic and abusive and put me out when I was 12, I never seen him again. He put me on the street and said, you know, go fend for yourself. Cause he was a damaged person. This system crushes people. especially at that time. So, so I just want to say that about my dad. And that's, I thought I was going to write about him. I get to my mother's side. I see these Black people dressed nice on the, this is Ancestry. And I'm looking at the year and it's the same year as slavery. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. How did y'all get these fine clothes looking, you know, all beautiful during the time of slavery? You can look on people's documents. I don't know. Have you done this on Ancestry?
Yeah.
I saw the census. It said register free Negroes. And that, like, I was like, then it said, like, my great, great, great grandfather, it's like he's mulatto. And then my great, great, his wife, she was Black. You know, it just had all these, and it said they were free. So I went to my fourth generation, free, fifth generation, free, sixth generation. I'm like, damn, sixth generation? I thought, man, if there's going to be reparations, I may not even get any. Come to find out, you know, I may get half on my daddy's side was enslaved.
Yeah,
I started thinking, you know, I was kind of tripping off that. That was, you know, we don't really. Then I Googled, said in Virginia during that time there was 50,000 free Black people working in their own community. They were barbers, they were, it said ditch digger. I never even heard of that, but that was an occupation. They were farmers. So I was just in shock to just receive this knowledge that we, that's not a narrative people like to promote. They like to promote, you Black, y'all were slaves. You were white, you own the slaves. But that's just not the truth.
Right.
To be honest, you know, and I thought, wow, this is crazy. So anyway, I go one more generation and I just see a woman, but no man. I thought, oh, maybe the Thomas Jefferson thing, like white man have my grandmother's a mistress and let all of her kids free, right?
Uh-huh.
No. I come to find out the woman, it says, indentured servant, Elizabeth Gallimore, presented in Amelia County court. I'm like, court? For unlawfully cohabitating with a Negro slave belonging to Henry Jones of Virginia. And I must have read that over like, I did, like 20 times, I just couldn't believe what my eyes were reading. And then my brother, I called him up because he's a PhD historian and he goes, indentured servant. He's like, you better sit down for this. You realize this is 1700s and indentured servants were white. And I was like, I understood myself. Then I was like, man, that's punk rock shit right there. That's like, these are some gangsters, you know, that I'm in a beautiful way that I'm related to. And I understood like why I may wear this hat and you won't. You know, it's like I came from really different people. They were thinking different outside of the box and even faced with the most crucial, with there must be a word, devastating laws of, you know, race at the time that they chose. Love a white woman from Scotland and a black enslaved man came together to form a powerful bond to challenge hate, to challenge racial segregationist laws. And I thought, that's the story that I want to tell. I want to preach from that podium because in this world now, I mean, all you gotta do is go online, sir. And you see this side over here, they're screaming as loud as they can. And then this side over here, they're screaming as loud as they can. And it's like, we start to feel like we're in a world where we're not gonna get anything done. We're not going to get to the next step because I don't care like what your beliefs are. It's like, if you're screaming at somebody and you're holding up signs and you're repeating the top three slogans, you ain't gonna get nowhere. And then if you disagree with what I'm saying, then I'm persecuting you. And it's not gonna work. And I just kept thinking about grandma and grandpa. Seven generations ago, they had far greater challenges and they did something that worked. So that's how I came to make the album and the film, Why Jesus Black Problems.
Well, definitely a poignant thing. And one of the tracks from there is Oh Betty. that thing that's coming out. The latest one that I've seen was Trudeau, all from the same record, right?
Trudeau, all from the same record. The newest one is, we just keep dropping them every week. It's now we're doing They Go Low. So we did Highest Bidder, Oh Betty. Highest Bidder was the story of like capitalism. How did we get here? Because people are greedy. That's how we got here. And then Oh Betty was like my, I thought of my great, 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 great grandfather, his love letter to his sweet Scottish woman. And then on Trudeau, I don't even know what that was freedom. That track is weird to me still. I love how weird it is. It's like hillbillies and 808s. I love it. That's a trippy ass track. It's like, I made that track with 2 6-year-olds. Unhinged, uninhibited, completely free. And I love that. Now we're doing this one called They Go Low. And I look at that, it's like, that's, when I'm looking across the street, the gas is $7 a gallon. They go low, bro. They go low. And the shocking thing is like, we don't do nothing. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know what to do. Like, somebody got to lead us against this. The gas prices are crazy. There's no, and Chevron and all those gas companies made record profits.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
Right. And you circle back to Highest Bidder. It's all about that capitalism push. Everything was done on capitalism, and looking at your great, 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 great ancestors for them to come together. I mean, now we just want people to leave us alone. Like, if you love whoever, just let them do their thing. You don't have to interfere. But slavery came from capitalism. There was no way that America could become quote unquote great without having that free labor. It just, that's why no other country could do that, because you can't have that happen. And historically, you know, people like your father being a generation out, my great grandparents being a generation out, and telling those stories, as we get further away from it, you look at like Holocaust survivors, like eventually people age out where we start to forget. So we need to document these things to remind people. It, you know, we're not trying to say it was better than it was or worse than it was. We just need to say exactly how it is, how it was, what actually happened. Because you can't sweep history under the rug, because then you'll just continue to repeat it, because you don't learn those lessons and those teachable moments. That now we say, no, there's a better way to do this. But as long as you have people who have greed or things that are dictated by money, even what you went through with the record industry, it's like, you're going to go to somebody just getting out of a coma and cut them from a record deal? Like, is that the kind of person you want to be? You know, is that the kind of company you want to be? But it happens all the time. You become a number and they're like, well, we've downsized. We've selectively reduced. Whatever you want to call it, we can justify anything, but doesn't make it right.
No, I think that's so beautifully spoken, man. I thank you for your words, because they're right. Who can argue with that point of view? It's, your greed is a nasty, nasty disease.
So how do you then run your companies differently? Because I know you have a record shop and other businesses. Were you always kind of entrepreneurship minded?
Yeah, even when I was selling drugs as a kid, growing up in the crack epidemic, I grew up in the 80s, man. I'm 54 years old, man. I was always that way. And that was a horrible, terrible thing us kids were doing. It's like self-genocide, but you don't know when you're young, but it was like, hey, the American dream, you can have stuff. You can have gold. You can have this car. You know, we were worshiping that stuff, but we lost our brothers, mm-hmm. and we lost our cousins, and we lost our friends. And is that worth gold? No, my brother, rest in peace, you know, was accidentally, you know, shot at 14. And it's like, that's all that whole mentality, that culture, that generation. So anyway, I don't want to get into that, but mm-hmm. yeah, I was always like, I got it from my dad, do for yourself, you can do it. And a lot of it now, especially during the pandemic, I created like this market that goes with the label, because I like the idea of like, I'm here, I'm on 32nd and San Pablo in West Oakland, 34th. I wanted to use my lot as a place where people could come. And if you got food, sell your food. If you're a vendor of the arts, sell your arts, and not charge people and let them keep everything. And it made me feel good. I want to say, like, I'm some good Samaritan. I think I did it. It made me feel very good. And I feel like that's the business model I want to embrace. It's like, if I can make other people prosper, then I automatically prosper. You know what I mean? It's a simple business practice. And that's one that I embrace, running storefront. And it's not easy. It is not easy. But I think it's who I want to be. And it's how I want to roll.
Yeah, for sure. You're treating people how you would want to be treated, or maybe how you weren't treated. You're circumventing that by doing it better. But people will always remember how you make them feel. That's what Maya Angelou said. And Zig Ziglar said, you know, if you give enough people what they want, you'll get what you want. People will remember that you did right by them, and they'll remember you and remember your name and remember your business and support you. And the community will rally around that too. It's very important to support locally.
I think you're dropping gems. I thank you. It's like, so you know stuff, but I love hearing that again. Thank you.
Of course. So then as you are, you know, you really made Oakland the home base. Oakland was, you know, really known for a long time, you know, with Tower of Power and groups like that for the Oakland sound. And Oakland is kind of like adjacent to San Francisco. So very different, even from Berkeley, that's close to there and stuff. So how does that kind of like influence your sound, and what would you consider your sound to be and your musical influences?
Well, I call my sound, usually I call it like Black roots. And I think that means if everything, I think, you know, funk, rock, soul, foot stomps, hand claps, country, Hammond B3s, mini moves, hip hop, whatever. I think it's a great thing about being a middle-aged guy doing this just from the streets. I don't really have to follow those rules. I feel like it's the sound of America, the beginning, which I call Black roots. I'm Black and those are my roots. I don't apologize for it. And I think that's how we got to be, is give even my name. I call myself Fantastic Negrito. It's about just appreciating the heritage that I came from and knowing that there was thousands of people that I came from that we will never know their names. And they've contributed so much to this sound, and they contribute so much to this feel, so much to this rhythm. So that's how I describe my sound. As far as the Bay Area, of course, I mean, the Bay Area, I'm from the old Bay Area where it's like, be original, be yourself. Don't try to sound like no one else and don't apologize about it. That's what makes E-40 great. I mean, he's still relevant. Kids still slap him because he was, you know, when he came out, it was like an alien, you know. That's why Sly Stone still feels great. You put on his records, it's just be yourself, you know. Short and original. Even MC Hammer, man, nobody ever been like him. Whether you love him or hate him or think he was commercial, it doesn't matter. No one came up with that idea. And I think this area, Metallica, Green Day, give it up for all of them too, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival. So I think we're just kind of a unique group of people. And the thing is, we got to remember that though, because now Oakland has become the city where, you know, if you don't have $1 million, literally, and I'm not joking, if you don't have $1 million, you can't live here. That's a little bit sad. You know, we lost 25% of the Black population's gone.
Yeah. So gentrification.
Yeah, it's a whole people out. Yeah, it's a whole different thing now. And you gotta, you know, now we gotta deal with that. You know, what's that sound like? You know, it's a whole different thing, but I'm trying to hold on here in the Bay Area. Trying to remember and keep drinking that Bay Area water. Because now they may need artists more than ever now.
That's definitely true. When you push out when you gentrify, you do push out the artist community, people on the fringe, just, you know, all over. But I do like how you called it Black roots. I love calling that music style, because when you think of the American root, it's like a tree with many roots, but all the styles of music that people know, from jazz to R&B to soul to rock music, they all stem from Black roots. Rap, hip-hop,
electronic, techno. Mm-hmm. I mean, brothers have been very creative with oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, They be like, you give us this impression, we go, it's going to sound like this. And that's a beautiful thing, and it's to be very proud of, and not to, you know, there's nothing wrong with us being proud of who we are. Ain't nothing wrong with
it. Right, and it should be unapologetically Black. You shouldn't have to apologize for being yourself. Nobody else is apologizing for being themselves. So why should we have to do it?
Absolutely not. And this, the idea of just Black, even African-American, I mean, I did my DNA test, and I'm like, shit, I'm 28% European, you know? So there you go. Ain't nobody being excluded. It's just call it what it is, call it how it is. You know, I remember they're asking Smokey Robinson about Blackness or something a long time ago. I read it, I never forgot it, because he's a very fair brother. He's like, shoot, that pigment don't mean nothing. You know, it's about the experience. You know what I mean? It's about what you embrace, what you embody. You know, that's what Black is. And it's a beautiful thing.
For sure. And it's good to see someone like yourself who's been on all sides of it, showing that that we are diverse and unique, but more importantly, especially showing Black men doing well and giving back to society and things like that, because so many people that, you know, have a negative connotation of being a Black man, there's a lot of stereotypes that the Black men will get. And from that, you know, certain services will be denied, or they get cast in a bad light, or labeled in a certain way that may not even be them, just because, you know, some people will think, well, they're aggressive, so we have to interact with them in a certain kind of way. But that's not true. You cannot put people in a box or just say blankly everybody is that, because it's too overly generalized. We're way too unique as a population to do that. But it's nice to be able to shine those spotlights, especially with an NPR, to amplify unapologetically Black men doing well in a different light, doing something good versus doing something that's perceived as negative.
Well, you know, I think negative and aggression is invading people's countries, you know, and I don't see us doing that, you know. So that's the first thing I think of. I think we are diverse, and I think I think we have to display courage and be ourselves and embrace that multifacetedness of just being a human being. Because first we're human beings, which is interesting. You know, it's like we're human being, all this other stuff. I mean, the difference between me and a Norwegian is like not like a point zero 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 point nothing. You know what I mean? It's just all flesh, skin, and bones. And what's different is the experience. That's all. The experience, which is, you know, can help condition the heart and the spirit and the soul and the mind.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And so now, as you're getting older and you're giving back to the community, I like to ask some questions to get your input on the next generation of artists that are growing up. So the next Negritos that are trying to become fantastic over a lifetime. What would you tell a new person starting out, a newbie starting out in music today? What advice would you give them?
It's what I tell them, because I come across them all the time. The first thing I say is, hey, get your own sound. Be yourself. Stop looking online at what the latest person is doing. You know, because you got 10, 20 people already doing that and already saying that. What is your voice? That's what I always say, be yourself. If you don't know yourself, find yourself. The other thing I say is that you can't do this alone. No team, no dream. And as an artist, you gotta be ready to contribute something. That's when it'll happen, when you're ready to give up something. You know, not just flex all the time. And other things I say are like, hey, don't take no for an answer. Like, only you have the control. You know, you can't, if you're letting somebody else tell your story, you might as well sit down. And the people that get it are the people that want it. Only you can stop you.
That's true. That's definitely good advice. I'm sure you run into people all the time, all walks of life, that want that information. So I'm glad you're giving those nuggets of wisdom. Now, it won't be today, but when it's all said and done, years and years and years in the future, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want to be remembered for most?
Boy, you're digging deep here. What do I want to be remembered for? Well, I think I would, I have a problem. Every time I start wanting some stuff, it gets me into trouble. I want this, I want that cake. I just came back from France. Oh my God, I want that pastry. I want that woman. Now, you know you married, boy. You know what I'm just saying? So that's a slippery slope for me. But what I hope is that people would say, like, this guy would not be stopped. No matter what, you think that their obstacles, his obstacles became his fuel. You know, his opponents became something to be inspired upon, you know, inspiration. He lived for other people because he knew that through living to other people, that's the best thing that you can do for yourself. You know, I try to mix it all in, man. I would hope that they would be like, you know, this guy was part damaged. Absolutely. Absolutely. Came from a lot of challenges, had a lot of personal challenges, you know, was knocked down, was positive, was negative, was all these things that make up a human being. But when they came together, that he tried to do the best that he could with what he had, getting, using those tools. See, I want him to say a lot about me. Let me just say, but yeah, that's what I like, you know, perseverance, man. We can, we must, we will take all that, take the bullshit, turn it into good shit. You know, anything that looked, you know, bad, like we got to just make it happen. That's what I would want. That would, because I know if they said that, it could be an example for other people.
I agree. And it's, and you're definitely been an example for a number of years. And I have no doubt that you'll continue to do that because it's just wired into your DNA. And that's from your genetics and ancestry, but also from your experiences all bundled into one. Now you're on tour or been on tour now. So where have you been and where are you going?
Well, I wasn't on tour. What I was doing is I was surprised. I had so many press requests for White Jesus, Black Problems. You know, I got to Japan, they're like, what the Jesus Black Problem? They're like, they want to talk about it. And, you know, they watch the film, like, man, brother, like, I mean, some people are even like, hey, man, you know, you're a Grammy winning artist. Why would you take a chance with this subject matter? And this title, I was in Italy. They're like, what? I was on TV explaining it. And I was in France, which the France, they get it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've just been talking about because I feel like it's not really my story. It's a story of my ancestors, and I'm kind of just a conduit, and I wanted to talk about it. It's something great to talk about, like the possibility of human love overcoming insurmountable odds and seemingly impossible obstacles. That I like that. It's a Romeo and Juliet story. So I've been doing that, and now I will start going on tour in May. Starts with like the UC Theater on July 10th. I'm doing the movie premiere. I premiered at South by Southwest. I will be premiering again at the San Francisco Black Film Festival. I'm doing premieres in LA, New York, Oakland. I'm playing Bottle Rock, and then June, I do an American tour. July, I do a full European tour. And then I'll come back in the fall, and I'll be doing South America. I'll be doing Asia. So it's pretty busy.
Awesome. Well, it's good to see the world opening up again. Definitely continue to stay safe, stay healthy for sure. Now, how can people find you online anywhere, your social media? Where should they best get at you? And then what should they listen to first?
Well, I think this, you know, I picked the name for a reason. There's only one fantastic negrito in the world. El primero en el mundo. There's only one. So that's easy. I mean, if you can't find Fantastic Negrito, then you don't want to find him. That's the way I look at that. That's all I say about that. I think you should go where your heart and your ears take you, because my sound is a menagerie, you know, of sonic, what do you call that? Cocktails. A menagerie of sonic cocktails is the Fantastic Negrito sound. And you know, let your heart and ears take you where you need to be. You know, not where you want to be, but where you need to be. Fantastic Negrito.
I agree. I think the first song on Deeper Grooves on 88.5 we played of you was Have You Lost Your Mind Yet, which I fell in love with instantly. And
oh, thank
I think
you. Thank you.
I think as an artist.
I was like, damn, you lost your mind yet? Because it's coming. Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate the support.
Of course. Well, we're so happy to have you on the at-home interviews for 88.5. We'll definitely keep in touch with you, let you know when the links are out, get it to your management team, and just continue to follow your career. I'm a fan, and I nerd out on that stuff. So getting to talk to you has been just a blessing and a privilege, sir. And I look forward to all of your great stuff that's to come. And congratulations on getting this story out there. I've never heard a story quite like it. And it is your ancestor story. So
yeah, it's pretty crazy story. So you're in L.A., right?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay, so I will be the premiere of White Jesus Black Problem. The film is June 2nd at the Grammy Museum. So I'm personally inviting you to come down and let's watch this 40-minute visual album. Invite all your friends.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll coordinate that for sure. I'd love to come. I love the Grammy Museum, and I performed there before, and I love their space. You're an artist, huh? Yeah, I have a funk band in LA. We play at Heart Vales quite often.
What's the name of your band?
It's just under my name, Cliff Beach, on Spotify.
Yeah, I got a song. Yeah, I didn't know that. You didn't tell me I'm an artist.
Yeah, artist, DJ, got a book coming out called Side Hustle and Flow in July. So
okay.
Yeah, a new EP.
I'm gonna check you out immediately.
Oh, I'd appreciate that. That would be awesome.
Right on, yeah. Brother.
Thank you. Well, fantastic. We'll talk soon. We'll take care.
Peace, brother. Peace. Be good out there. All right.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening once again to Deeper Grooves. And we had a special treat today on season 5, episode 44, featuring multi-Grammy winner Fantastic Negrito. He is nominated currently for an American Roots performance for Oh Betty at the Grammys this year. And I have to tell you, I saw his documentary series at the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles, and we had a blast. He's been written up in NPR Music, Guitar World, Billboard, and Mojo for the current album and music video, White Jesus, Black Problems, and believe me, I know about that. Come back next week to hear more great musicians talk about their journey and career tracks on Deeper Grooves.